This is West Virginia Morning on West Virginia Public Radio. I'm Beth Voorhees. New data from the U.S. Census Bureau shows the overall poverty rate in West Virginia stayed about the same last year, but the number of children living below the poverty line increased, despite a newfound focus on the issue in the state legislature. Ashton Mara sat down with Executive Director of the Center on Budget and Policy, Ted Bettner, to discuss the data released yesterday.
So let's start very generally and talk about what is this data?
Well, each year the American Community Survey releases data, usually in September, that looks at income, it looks at poverty, it looks at housing, and it looks at a whole assortment of things, health insurance data, it looks at that, it looks at the labor market, and they release it every year about this time. But the two things that really stick out usually in the report are poverty rates and median household income, and looking at the labor force.
Okay, so let's start, you know, kind of just a general overall picture of West Virginia. It says on the whole, more than 18% of West Virginians are living in poverty, which is not the highest in the nation, but it's still a pretty high rate. So why are other states doing so much better? States like New Hampshire and Maryland, who have rates in the single digits to maybe 10%. Why do they do better?
I think there's a lot of underlying factors. I mean, I think overall West Virginia, you know, hasn't exactly benefited a lot from its natural resources. It tends to be far away from big industrial sectors. It tends to have a very rugged landscape. And these things sort of are a fertile ground for poverty in West Virginia, and persistently so. But there are things that those states that you mentioned that are doing. They're making much better investments in K-12 education, in higher education, and especially early childhood intervention programs. And those are the things that we need to be doing, too, is to be making bolder investments in programs that we know that will boost jobs and boost our economy later on.
So why do you think there's a trend for southern states to have a higher poverty rate than there is for northern states? That's what the data shows.
Yeah, I mean, in general, those states are also tend to be less unionized. They tend to be right-to-work states. That's one factor I think comes into play. They also tend to invest a lot less in their social safety nets in the states. So those things can matter a lot.
So overall, the rate of children living in poverty in the nation is falling. This data shows that it dropped for the first time since 2000, you know, overall for the U.S., but that's not necessarily the case in West Virginia.
Yeah, I mean, when you're looking at the statistics, there's no statistical significantly difference between the last couple of years when we're looking at overall poverty. It's basically been stagnant. But what we are seeing is a huge change in the share of young children that are in poverty. And according to the data this year, 1 in 3 young children under the age of 5 are living in poverty. And that's something that should really conjure up action from our state legislators and from other people in the community.
So why? Why do we see a higher rate of poverty in such young age groups?
Well, if you look at West Virginia, about more than half of the births are through Medicaid. So when people are younger in their life and they're having kids, they tend to have much lower incomes than when they're in their 40s and 50s.
And this might be kind of a politically charged question, but what should West Virginia be doing to combat it? I mean, I think you alluded to some of those things earlier, but it's been an issue in the state legislature. They've tried to take on child poverty, or at least have been talking about it. And this data doesn't seem to show that it's getting any better, even though it's getting more attention.
Also, most of the actions that we've taken haven't taken place yet either. So one thing the legislature did last year that was a really great move, they raised the minimum wage from $7.25 to $8.75 in 2016, but that hasn't taken place yet. You know, one thing that's really important to keep in mind is that we don't have to live in persistent poverty in West Virginia. The state legislature can take action to help struggling families, and that includes investments in early child intervention and education programs, like home visiting. That includes enacting a refundable state-earned income tax credit that 24 other states have done. That also includes making college more affordable so more people can get in the middle class. And unfortunately, in a lot of those areas, we've been sort of moving backwards, especially in the higher education. And these are the things that we need to be making more investments in so we can build a stronger economy.
It seems like those things are a result of the fact that the state budget is just struggling. I mean, we're cutting higher education because the state can't afford to support it at the same level.
Well, the state can't afford it. I mean, what did the state do over the last couple of years to make that happen? We only have about $425 million in tax cuts that we've enacted over the last couple of years. So when you cut taxes, you're pretty much automatically cutting investments in schools, investments in healthcare, and investments in higher education. And other important public programs. So a lot of those problems are self-inflicted.
Ted Bednar with the West Virginia Center on Budget and Policy, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you.
Two West Virginia higher education institutions got some good news this month from the federal government. Sarah Lowther Hensley reports.
Title III Strengthening Institutions grants help schools become more self-sufficient and expand their capacity to serve low-income students. The grants help them improve and strengthen their academic quality, institutional management, and fiscal stability. West Virginia Wesleyan College and the University of Charleston are the only two West Virginia institutions to receive one of these highly competitive grants during this year's funding cycle. UC will receive just under $2 million over 5 years. University spokeswoman Carrie Stallings says UC's grant will focus on improving support for distance learning. She says UC plans to develop more online programs and programs that are hybrid, meaning that while much of the work is done online, students do meet face-to-face with faculty on a scheduled basis. The Title III funding will allow UC to provide faculty, academic advisors, and technology support staff to focus on the needs of those learners. Wesleyan's grant will provide $10 million over 5 years. Wesleyan President Pamela Balsh says applying for the larger amount was a long shot, and no other institution has ever received one this large.
To get this amount of money, how much it will impact a school our size is so phenomenal that everybody is just absolutely thrilled.
The grant will allow Wesleyan to focus on student retention, renovate its classrooms with state-of-the-art technology, and put $400,000 a year into its endowment if the school matches that amount through private fundraising. President Balsh sees these Title III grants as great investments of government money.
We're really making a difference. Our whole school philosophy is service. And so when our students come here and they get a great education, they're also learning how to serve their communities and go out into the world. And so to me, that is the best use of taxpayer money you could ever, ever have.
The grants run on the federal budget cycle, so they'll go into effect beginning October 1st. For West Virginia Public Radio, I'm Sarah Lowther Hensley in Buchanan.
Our political talk show Viewpoint airs this morning at 9. Host Ashton Mara is here with a preview. Good morning.
Good morning, Beth. Today on our show, State Auditor Glenn Gaynor is joining us to discuss why, after 21 years holding a state office, he's decided to take on a fairly strong incumbent in Congressman David McKinley in the 1st Congressional District. I'll also be asking the auditor for his thoughts on the Affordable Care Act and regulating the natural gas industry. Also on the show today, Dr. Neil Burch. He's a political science professor at West Virginia University. And Burch says the real political news of the week is Senator Manchin's strong stance and subsequent vote against President Obama's plan to arm Syrian rebels in the fight against the Islamic State. Of course, Congress did pass that measure last night. And we also profile Mountain Party candidate for U.S. Senate Bob Henry Baber, a name some may recognize from his prior bid for governor.
Right. Sounds like a very interesting show. Ashton Mara, thank you very much.
Thank you.
This is West Virginia Morning, coming up on 744. Some fog this morning, becoming partly sunny today. There is a chance of scattered rain, temperatures in the 60s and 70s. Fog developing tonight with lows in the 50s, mostly sunny on Saturday, temperatures in the 70s to low 80s, partly cloudy, a chance of rain on Sunday.
Support for West Virginia Public Radio is provided by Suddenlink, providing West Virginia with internet, phone, and TV services. Now with TiVo to stream Netflix to your TV. More at suddenlink.com or 888-592-3868.
With Paul Thorne's trademark humor and razor-sharp insight, he performs What the Hell is Going on this Mountain Stage Song of the Week. Paul Thorne with What the Hell is Going On. You can hear this song again and more music Saturday night at 8 on Mountain Stage right here on West Virginia Public Radio. West Virginia Morning is a production of West Virginia Public Broadcasting, which is solely responsible for its content. Keep up with all the latest West Virginia news throughout the day on our website, wvpublic.org. Follow us on Twitter at WV Public News and find us on Facebook. Support for our news bureaus comes from Shepherd University, West Virginia University, Marshall University, and Concord University. West Virginia Morning is produced with the assistance of Suzanne Higgins, Clark Davis, Jessica Lilly, Glennis Board, Dave Mistich, Roxy Todd, Sarah Lowther Hensley, and Liz McCormick. Our theme music is by Matt Jackford. Our producer is Ashton Mara. Our director is Teresa Wills. I'm Beth Voorhees.